Well, welcome to the ASI cast, and today I'm chatting with Nilsson's Maynak Mazumdar. Welcome to the podcast,
Thanks, Richard. Good to be here.
Maynak. Now, today we're going to be talking about identity resolution, which is an increasingly important topic in media measurement. Nilsson's been making significant efforts in recent years to source additional inputs that can allow the allocation of demographics to viewing to be improved and cope with the ever more granular data sets that media measurement is having to encompass. In the last few months, there have been two announcements about agreements that Nielsen has secured. Before we look at those, Maynak, can you give us some context on what the Nielsen mission is when it comes to measurement? What relative roles do traditional panels play alongside so-called big data? What's your strategy when it comes to identity resolution?
Thanks for the question, Richard. If you take a, I'll let me take a step back and try to maybe articulate the vision. The vision of the company has not changed. We are still a measurement company, and which that means that we make every effort to measure people, not machine-to-machine traffic. Technology has been changing over the years, and we have seen that, as a consumer, we adopted new media devices, new way of consuming media. So there's a massive amount of transition and what I call disruption happening in that space. But our mission is pretty straight, pretty simple. Our goal is to measure people, not the machines, measure as accurately as possible and count them properly. And measure everybody. It's not people who are just subscribing to, say, ITV or a cable box, or people who can afford only expensive smart television. So we want to make sure we are measuring all types of viewing across all types of geography, ethnicity, and population. So that's the mission, and that has not changed. So if you take that approach, and look at what we have accomplished in identity. By the way, we have had identity since 2010. We have a product called Digital Ad Ratings, where in that product, we were able to have a, build close partnerships at that point with Facebook and other walled gardens and have the ability to build our identity system off it. But as you know, since 2016, 2017, with the new laws and regulations, we collectively decided to de-link those integrations. And we still integrate with walled gardens. But in this case, we wanted to build our own identity spine that will allow us to continue to measure who are the person or persons, watching media on those devices. So that's a journey, and that's, I think that's what you're referring to, the announcement and some of the, work that we recently have announced to the marketplace.
Well, the first of those announcements was a tie-up with the Trade Desk. Can you give some background for people who don't know them on where they fit into the media landscape and, in particular, what they bring to the picture in terms of measurement?
Yeah, it's a very good question. If you think about digital measurement, right? Digital measurement, you kind of have two sides or two types. One is the walled gardens, which means some of these platforms have a lot of data and good subscribers' data, users' data, so they have a good way to represent their audiences. So that's, we are working with all of them and integrating our panel to correct biases and do the measurement. But then there is what I call rest of the web, which is a pretty vast, size of the internet and the web. And we want to make sure we are including everybody in the measurement. And if you think about that segment for rest of the web, Trade Desk is a leader. They have been leading, a lot of the advertising and marketing activities in that space. So our deal basically allows us to do some, very few simple things. We are using Trade Desk data signals to improve basically two use cases. One is get a better sense and improving demographics. And we use a lot of signals to build those demographics. So who's actually exposed to an ad on the rest of the web that count. But the second point is important is deduplication, right? So that allows us to really understand whether the same person was been exposed to an ad on two different websites or two different devices. So the relationship is basically we ingest their data and take those signals to improve our demographics, as well as linking the what I call the devices to a person, that linkages. Mm-hmm. And in return, Trade Desk gets the benefit of independent third-party measurement that they can offer to their clients. So it's a win-win on both sides, and we are pretty excited about that. And by the way, this is, as you know, this is a global deal. I think we have about 17 countries outside the United States where we are ingesting Trade Desk data and to make sure we harden and solidify our identity spine in those markets.
And where do the Trade Desk get their data from? How do they gather their data?
How do we get our data?
No, where did the Trade Desk get their data from? I'm unclear as to what the Trade Desk do, to be honest. I mean, where do they have data? Where do they get it from? What is it?
So, you know, like Trade Desk is like any other large platform for the rest of the web, where they have a lot of behavioral data of users that they're targeting and they're measuring and their whole sort of analytics. So they've built on the programmatic side pretty rich what I call data assets. It's one of the data assets that we use, and we have in our identity spine about 10 plus large partners like Trade Desk. What's important about the Trade Desk is they are focused exclusively on the open web. And it aligns very well our mission, which is that we want to measure everybody, not only large platforms, but everybody. And I think this relationship continues to demonstrate our mission that we want to measure everybody. And that's where I think the Trade Desk relationship is very important to both the parties.
Mm. I mentioned a couple of recent developments. The other of those was a partnership with Experian, who have had a bit more experience with. How does that fit into the measurement jigsaw?
Yeah, so, you know, as the digital disruption continues, you know, there's obviously a greater emphasis to replace cookies and mobile IDs and ad IDs and retain what I call personal level measurement that accurately counts and deduplicate audiences across platforms. Integrating Experian data into the Nielsen ID system will further strengthen the Nielsen's ability to match personal level data to devices, increasing the scale, accuracy, and demographic reporting. What this deal does for our Nielsen One ID system is allows us to, you know, bring more household level information as an input. And then, you know, once you have the household level information, you know, sorted out, in this case with Experian, and we're working with other parties as well, then the next challenge or opportunity for us is to make sure link the persons within the devices within those households. So what Experian does is gives us the baseline of household demographics. However, as you know, we have a panel of ground, you know, truth set. We do use that truth set to improve upon Experian demographics. Where there's overlap, we know the probability of accuracy between our panels and Experian data. And sometimes there are errors. When we do find the likelihood probability, we use those estimates to correct the demographics and the footprint. And once we have the demographics, household demographics sorted out, then the question is person's demographics that is tied to the devices. So that's the science of computation graph that feeds into what I call the identity system for Nielsen One.
Mm. And how transferable are those approaches across different markets? You mentioned these are multi-country tie-ups. Are they exclusive, and how wide are the agreements?
Yes. First of all, the science is extremely transferable. In other words, the data tables, the definitions, and the formats, they're exactly the same across all markets. The how we build the graph and the algorithms, they are, we don't have specific algorithms. We may have some versions of it. For UK might be slightly different than France and Germany, depending on the data rights and access and exclusivity, to your point. But underlying science and methodologies are exactly the same. And we have to do that because this system is built to scale, right? So it's extremely interoperable. And just one comment on this is a good question, actually. One thing we did with Trade Desk is that we want to make sure our identity is interoperable with their IDs. So which means that if clients are continues to still target on based on Trade Desk ID, we would be able to measure them on our identity as well. So there's a what I call interoperability. Now, in terms of exclusivity, I'm not so sure how exclusive these are, but I'm pretty sure that this has been one partnership. As I said, it's about 17 countries that's been powering our identity resolution for the open internet. And the key markets are France, Italy, and UK for now. And then I think the next set is Japan, Australia, Germany, which I think we launched last month already, all of these three. And then there's a whole set of other markets in Asia and Europe as well that's coming right after that.
Now, your colleague Sarah at our event in cyberspace, actually, I was about to say in a town, but it wasn't. It was an online event back in November, our annual conference. We're hoping the next one will be in a physical location. Took part in a panel in which there was consensus amongst the measurement suppliers. I think that the panel itself, the concept of the panel, is particularly enduring because of consent. Because your panelists taking place in your part in your research tools have consented to be tracked and have their data used. The challenge with a lot of the big data sets that potentially can be ingested is that we are waiting to see what the impact of the so-called cookie apocalypse is, and also the tightening of consumer privacy legislation around the use of these data sets. Where do you see that headed? Because on the one hand, it's great that people are recognizing the enduring value of a consented panel. On the other hand, it is putting more restrictions on these sorts of data sets in terms of have people consented for their data to be used in this way? How do you at Nielsen evaluate the acceptability of a data set on those parameters?
Yeah, I mean, all our panels are consented, as you know. And in the United States, our television panels, including audio as well, which is PPM, these are probability sample, high quality consented panel that allows us to not only measure the TV behavior or audio, but increasingly it allows us to measure their behavior within the walled gardens, within other devices. So it's what I call, think about it's about 100 plus thousand folks who are in the panel, highly representative. We are able to measure their all media behavior, including streaming. That is very important for us, right? I think increasingly the quality of the panel and ability to track and measure all behavior is becoming increasingly powerful, especially when we lose all the signals. To your point, third-party cookies going away, they are going away, but they're not going away. They're going away in a different shape or form. So all these challenges of rules and regulations coming down the pike, I think is going to erode these signals, right? Or what I call erode deterministic signals. So when you lose all these deterministic signals where you could tie in a person to definitely a browser, an ID or mobile ad ID, you start building models. And this is where we are finding, terrific success, by the way, in using our panel to build machine learning models to get that signals, not only build better, more accurate, but validated, because you could now validate the accuracy of these models. And by the way, you need that for, and at least on our side, we need that for MRC accreditation and transparency and openness. So it's not only the panel itself, but how the panel corrects the biases and build those models, and to extent you could validate them between test and control, that's very, very important. Now, I think the question, maybe underlying question you're asking is, there are a lot of efforts going on in consented panel, which means that this online sample or your subscriber base, you can send them to use their hashed email ID and bring them across to the identity. I think that's a good strategy, Richard. I feel that as an industry, hashed email is going to be a good identifier that will allow you to, or us, everybody in the industry, to link, associate a device with a person. And I think more and more that's going to be a standard. And we feel there are other identifiers like IP addresses and you know, user agents and so and so forth. But we feel the hashed email address is where a lot of folks use that as a login to your Netflix account, login to your subscriber account. So that's a pretty good persistent identifier that a lot of us are going to use to get a more, what I call, broader footprint, and which we call consented panel.
It wouldn't work for me because I've got six different emails, but I know the Dash survey that the ARF published, that we had an interview with your former colleague Paul Donato on. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the topics they are actually tracking, isn't it? The number of emails people have and use. Most people tend to have one primary one, don't they?
Yeah, and you're right. So you use maybe seven emails, but you use those seven emails on the same IP address, perhaps, right?
Mm.
So IP address is basically you could use that as a surrogate for your household. In same way, I think you think about this is a simple way we think about it is that at the first step, you need to get the household sorted out, which means, you know, the device is sitting in a household. Now for TV, it's easy because you don't carry TV with you, right? It sits there. So there's a way to link that to Experian matches we just talked about, or IP addresses. And then the next step is to make sure all the devices within that household get linked or associated with the persons living in the household. Because for us, this is a very important step to really support what I call two critical use cases for Nielsen. One is who is watching a program or ad, which is a person, and then how many unique audiences. So you have to dedupe across screens. Now, if you think about it, what I just explained to you is nothing about machines, by the way. It all translates down to people. Right. And I think that's a very important message I want to communicate to you and your audiences. For us, is measuring people and the audience is more important than counting browsers or IDs and so on and so forth. Those are proxies that allows us to get to some of the truth. But on the other hand, we're using the panel to really guide us in terms of models and the gaps and the signals, because it's a truth set that allows us to know how useful these proxies are. Sometimes they are useful, sometimes they are not. And we're learning quite a bit. And we just launched big data in national measurement in the United States last month. And we'll start sharing some of our findings, especially with ACR data. You know, with RPD, I think RPD is well understood because, you know, a lot of us, and I know in the UK, you have been using RPD for the last 20 years or so. So people understand the data coming out of those cable boxes. But when you look at ACR, it's a pretty different game. And there's some very, very interesting measurement challenges with that data, which we'll start sharing to the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Finally, looking specifically at the US market, a question I've been asking quite a few of our recent guests on the podcast. So I'll throw you on the into the fire as well with a similar question. But arguably, is measurements moving more towards assembling a meal using a variety of ingredients, as we've been discussing with the panel arguably at the centre of that. A number of different chefs have appeared on the US scene, and there is talk about what's being referred to as alt currencies, the idea that a market like the US could have multiple currencies with buy and sell side effectively able to pick and choose which they use. I have to say that has caused some eyebrows to be raised outside of the US. Does that, the idea of multiple currencies, reflect a healthy competitive market, or is it effectively impractical because people will just pick the currency that gives them the biggest figures?
You just answered my question. But let me give some color to this. I mean, you know, historically, there have been alternate metrics that a lot of our clients, marketers and advertisers, use to understand a buy. But you know, in the end of the day, you need one set of yardstick, like one yardstick. Not only that, this yardstick needs to be persistent. It needs to be consistent, and it needs to be stable and predictable. I think, you know, currency systems are not that, you know, I would say it's, people talk about currency, a lot of the things about currency is also technology and infrastructure and what you build around that. It's not the data. It becomes a transaction systems, and, you know, those CPMs and the ads and the dollars and cents flows into the CFO spreadsheet, right? So it's a data that a lot of other activities happen, and including finance activities, including creative, including, you know, targeting and tech and so on and so forth. And then there's infrastructure issue, right? So for example, you know, we see in RPD data, and you have your own experiences as well, the data, there might be gaps in data overnight. Right. So when you build currency system, what happens on your relying on other people's data, there'll be gaps, there'll be errors because somebody did a software upgrade, suddenly the data changed. And if there's a gap, you can't build a currency off it because people are going to be trading. And if there's a gap of data in 4 hours or 5 hours, if you don't have the algorithms to make sure you're estimating that gap, is going to be a big issue. The final point I want to make, the currency, is about transparency and validation. It is so important for the trust, because this is what marketers, at least in the US market, and I'm familiar with the UK as well, the same, where, you know, the marketers would like to trust, have the trust on the data that's independently validated. They can understand it, that if they do X, they're going to get Y, right? I think these attributes are very, very important for currency. So we believe that there's, you know, in the end of the day, there has to be one currency. Now, having said that, there are other measurement, other data that comes into play to make a holistic buy and understanding the behavior. So look, all this competition, I would say, is a good thing because it shows that there's a lot of disruption happening in the marketplace. It's ultimately disruption in the audience, right? How we consume media. And as audience and consumers, we are consuming media differently. Some of our clients are also adapting their business models. And that allows you know, us to build different metrics, different measurement, you know, incorporating big data, incorporating other data sources. But ultimately, we believe there's going to be one currency system, because if there's not one yardstick, you know, it's just going to be a lot more confusion and a lot of inefficiencies, by the way. Because when we talk to the agencies, they, you know, for their perspective, they want efficient platform of data and infrastructure that allows them to transact. They're not in the business of comparing and contrasting 20 different metrics across, you know, 50 different networks and come up with something. So I think there's a lot of things. If you study the currency, how currency gets built, how it gets delivered, and how they get supported, and the business around that is important to consider.
Mm, definitely. Well, it's a topic that I'm sure will feature prominently at our event later in the year, and hopefully you'll be there to take part in that debate with us. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to catching up with you soon. Thanks, Maynard.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for the opportunity to talking to you guys.